Hi, this is Jim Kerr of Simple Minds in the studio to celebrate the greatest hits.
Welcome back. I'm Redbeard. After forming in the post-punk late 70s, then rising to heady international success in the MTV 80s, there was a real question by 1995 whether Simple Minds could remain relevant into a third decade. I asked lead singer, co-writer Jim Kerr, just how tough was it when American grunge grew so dominant by the mid-90s without a keyboard in sight?
It's funny, I was thinking about this just sort of recently. I think if you've been a band, or one of the main bands of a generation, as soon as the new epoch comes round, as soon as the next generation comes round, pretty much you're going to cop it anyway, regardless of whether it's grunge or whatever it is. But when the new thing comes, you know, when the younger brothers, they don't want their older brother's thing. Well, actually, certainly the period I grew up, you know, you wanted your own bands and you wanted your own things. But I was actually thinking on a larger scale. I mean, I don't really know if the world outside of the prism of pop music or rock music thinks that. But by the end of the 80s, you know, symbolically, a lot of things were really changing. I mean, the Berlin Wall was one of the main things, and that whole, there was a lot of things going on. Certainly from a UK perspective, you mentioned the grunge there, which of course was also very, very popular in the UK. But in the UK, they also had this, there was a new music movement with a whole rave culture. There was a new drug on the scene. Every time there's a new form of pop music, there's usually a drug goes hand in hand. I guess the point I'm trying to make was it was going to be out with the old, in with the new anyway. And although one or two would have managed to, you know, jump the divide, not many. And in our case, in Simple Minds' case, to jump that divide, you would have needed all your wits around you. That's when you would really gathered and you know, gathered round, and everyone shoulder to the wheel again. In our case, it was anything but that. The wheels were coming off. So the answer was, it was definitely, I think it was hard for everyone, but it was hard in our case because, you know, some of the guys that had been a huge part of ours no longer wanted to go off around the world, and we lost a lot of firepower. And to be really honest as well, although it sounds so wimpy, seeing that we started in 1976 right through until 1990, I don't think we had a day off. Not because anyone made us, we loved this thing, but it was like we were this jumbo jet with no fuel left in the tank.
Ah!
Visible emerged from 2005's Simple Minds comeback album Black and White, the band's most critically acclaimed album in 10 years, and arguably their strongest collection of songs since Once Upon a Time. Here's singer and co-writer Jim Kerr of Simple Minds.
Well, there was real, you know, connections to that, because we probably, although there was eight on One Once Upon a Time, probably in terms of time, it was about the same amount. And also we worked with a fantastic Bob Clearmountain and got that, you know, very full-blooded sound again. We needed to show people that, we needed to show ourselves, and we needed to show people that it wasn't just that we'd got our mojo back, but we needed to make a kind of record that we imagined, had you came to it thinking it was a new young band, that it would have, you know, that it would have, you know, sort of seriously impressed you. I've been getting a lot of compliments the last 5 years and stuff. And you know what? I think I finally got the voice I always wanted. It, you know, it took that time. It took that time. It took it. You know, your voice is it reflects everything that's gone in you. It you've lived, but you still have energy. You still have vitality, and basically a lot of the stuff. Even I'm going up to the studio tomorrow, and it's almost guaranteed that the first take will be easily the backbone, yeah, the keeper. There's something about it. And more to the point, I'm glad to say, and God, I'm, you know, sort of literally knocking on wood here. It seems in the studio now I go up to the mic and it's just sort of there.
Bob Seger once told me that no one helps you with advice when you're struggling to make it. But as soon as you're successful, everybody tries to tell you what to do. Between 1995 and 2005, as Simple Minds music sales diminished and band members left, the band may have been guilty of only one thing, an excess of earnestness. Again, Jim Kerr.
I think you could be guilty of trying too hard. But, you know, that's not something I would, looking back, it's not something that I would worry about. Remember this thing, we at least our bands, you know, we got a chance to grow kind of organically, but you're still never really ready for it. You're never really ready because you've never been there. You don't know anyone who's been there. There's no manual, there's no book, there's no one, you know, that stood in the center of the stage and had that voice in his head that went, you know, thousands of people going crazy. There's this voice in your head saying, you're a charlatan. You know, so there's, of course you're trying too hard. And also back in those days too, you know, you're learning on the hoof, it's ad hoc. You know, I think I've been really lucky. The guys that I played with and stuff, they were a hell of a band, but, you know, it wasn't always consistent, you know, especially back then. Technology was different and you could have, you know, really awful monitoring sounds, and just, the gig where you really wanted it to happen would be the awful gig.
I had to ask Jim Kerr if at any time he and Charlie Burchill seriously considered folding the Simple Minds franchise.
For about 6 months, yeah. For about 6 months, it just was like getting blood out of stone. Now, I don't know if that was because we weren't drilling down deep enough into the stone, or they're just, you know, I think what happens is this, you know, when you start off, you know, you're not old enough to really, you haven't had a life, so your first few records and your first albums, they're your career and stuff. But once you go on, there's a certain point where it's no longer your career, it's your life. And life doesn't, we're luckier, I think, than most. God, we're lucky. But life doesn't always go swimmingly well. And it doesn't always go swimmingly well for all of you at the same time. Yeah, you know, you got to give some more attention. You know, when you're 18, 19, I think Simple Minds did 4 or 5 albums in their first 3 years. Now, I don't know how we did that. I don't know how we did that. Because all I can remember was being on tour. But actually, I do know how we did it. We just didn't sleep. There was nothing else in our lives. There was nothing else in our lives. If you fast forward, even 10 years, never mind 20, your band's an industry. That takes time alone, just the industry of your band, because even though you get agents and managers and all that stuff, you still need to attend to stuff. So there's 15% of your time. Then if you get married and kids and all that's great and stuff, there's 30% of your time. And to so the point I'm making is suddenly you're down to 40%, whereas when you were a kid, and you know, you had nothing. You was just there all the time.
And Kerr agrees that teenage fans who may have discovered Simple Minds 30 years ago with Promised You a Miracle or Don't You Forget About Me rarely see it that way either.
No, they don't. You know, they see their band and their four or five members, and there's a touch of the Mount Rushmores, you know. You're just there, and, you know, guys will say, well, why don't you play with him? And you go, I haven't seen him for 27 years. And they go, yeah, well, you should. And you go, you know, I don't even know if he plays anymore. I don't, you know, they're very honest and sincere. In fact, I say that, you know, your fans are the hardest people to impress because they, you know, they know all your chops and they think they know the story. But, you know, it's so, you know, people say to us, what's the band like? You know, is it, you know, the band's like the Sopranos. You know, I don't know who's Tony, but you know, you there's some things you just can't say, you know, we're still family, and you get together, even so-called ex-members and stuff, they're still family. They're still, you know, these are guys you were in the trenches with, even if you had fallen out, even if, well, certainly from my point of view and Charlie's, fans put together pieces, and it's that thing of, you know, putting two and two and coming up with 86. And thinking they know the story. But then again, where would we be without those fans and without their attention?
Tell me, why do you know what we're looking for? Any truth in the rumors I ignore? Tell me why I still deny. Anytime she grew any sound, I can keep my feet up on the ground. In the air, reeling everywhere, there's something new and I must say, it makes me feel so super real. Look and you'll find I'm driving to space and time.
Beautiful stranger, I want.
Stranger from the Black and White album has a signature Charlie Burchill chorus hook with that circular guitar progression. Jim Kerr of Simple Minds.
And certainly with those tracks that you mentioned there, they were it's nice that you picked them out. They're very much key. And but I remember from the early blueprints that we knew we had really good tunes, and it doesn't all fall into place, far from it, but at least when you're pulling your hair out, you know what you're pulling your hair out for. I think, you know, the thing I mentioned earlier, there was probably about 6 month period where the band was flatlining, and we had to decide, are we going to go around here like punch drunk boxers just for the sake of it, because we don't know what else to do? And the answer was no, we're not, because not only would that have been sad, but thankfully we didn't have to do it. You know, we had been looked after, and in terms of, you know, it wasn't like we're looking to pay the electricity bill. And my heart goes to them. I would never, you know, sometimes you see some of these tours and, they look like sad old things or whatever. But it didn't all go great. But certainly we were looked after to the extent of we didn't have to do anything we didn't want to do, basically. And that was just, you know, amazing, beyond our dreams. But we did have to decide, are we wasting our times here? Are we just going to coast and then diminish? And we had a sniff. We would play. We didn't play live much, but we would play occasionally. And whenever we played live, I mean, it was just great. I mean, it wasn't just great to do it. It sounded like there was progress as a live thing. But at the same time, we thought, we don't want to go around and just be a museum piece. It's great to have a catalogue and all that, but you have to be adding new chapters to the story, because you just have to be, or otherwise it is exercising and nostalgia, and that's all right, but not for us. And so we thought, we better... Do we have the time? Do we want to give this? Do we want to get into it again? Do we want to really challenge ourselves first and foremost? And I guess we did do that, and we kind of off the radar. So the first thing was to see if we could start the engine up again. And in between, we got to Black and White. We're like, okay, not only is it started up, we've actually turned it round. At least we're going in the right direction. And from then, it's been a case of how far can this go? And so it's been that, you know. There's been that, and also along the way, again, you know, you can't do it on your own. You're picking up good managers and picking up good people who work with you, people who really believe in you, cheerleaders, people that. You know, we all agree, let's not always take the easy option. Let's not always go for the money. Let's go, let's build again. And that's been a kind of a philosophy for the last half a decade. It's all right. Thank you.
I love Jim Kerr's pounding grand piano on Simple Minds' Different World from 2005's Black and White album. There's been a flurry of activity in Europe, the UK, and Australia, all started with last winter's release of the Times 5 box set and the subsequent 5x5 European and now Australian tours. I asked Jim Kerr to explain the popular concept.
I call it 5x5, yeah, or 5x5, but it's 5x5, yeah. One of the frustrating things with the band over the years was that there was a bit of a detente with the record company at the time who owned the catalogue, EMI. And they themselves were always going through turmoil, and they were being sold, and they were getting new owners. And as we were trying to get this, trying to get on a good footing with them again, personnel kept changing. So it would be, you know, two steps forward, one step back. Anyway, finally, I'm glad to say that all got resolved a couple of years ago. But we thought, you know, the catalogue in the meantime, in this period of time, it had just been sleeping, you know. It hadn't been taken care of in terms of, you know, the remasters and repackaging and remarketing and all that stuff. And we thought, as we're working on new stuff, why don't we in tandem get the catalogue in shape? And I think the thing about Simple Minds, I mean, all bands have their own story, but there's a few fault lines, but there's one fault line goes through our career. You know, we had our big breakthrough in the 1986, 87, but 85 actually. But to most people that only knew the band from MTV and all that stuff, we'd done 4 or 5 records before that, 5 albums. And those albums, you've already referred to them, they'd been really sort of, you know, heralded in a way that saw the band, you know, known as being, you know, groundbreakers and very much ahead of the game. Through the years, the success through the Breakfast Club and MTV and all that stuff, that side of our career had been forgotten. That was also the side that a lot of the LA fans loved, and the especially the media. And we just thought, in terms of the catalogue, you know what, let's go out and almost do a no-hits tour where we play because we had a lot of, you know, critical success with those records. But up until the last one, New Gold Dream, there wasn't much commercial success. Let's go out and play these songs that we haven't played for a long, long time. Let's go and let people see the roots of the band, where we grew out of, and so on. And therefore, we decided to do a tour playing essentially 5 songs from the first 5 albums. We only did about... we did less than 20 dates through the major cities in Europe, but it worked a treat. It made a lot of people really, really happy, first and foremost. But it also got people saying the kind of things about Simple Minds that hadn't been said for a long time. You know, a lot of people came back to it. People came out of the wood who we didn't know, a lot of the younger bands and all this stuff. And so as an exercise... You know what? It just happened. What happened was that, yeah, it was nostalgia, but at the same time, you can't go back. That was then, this is now. But if you kind of do it all right, you can really conjure up the ghosts of that period. And I think for people come along at the shows, they felt, God, you really did conjure up that period. And we got it right.
The late singer and lyricist of The Doors, Jim Morrison, once said that their music was about love, death, and travel. So I asked Jim Kerr, who with Simple Minds fills the same roles as did Morrison, just how powerful of a passport Simple Minds music has turned out to be.
But I'm still a traveler. In fact, I'm going away. We play in Australia, as you know, end of this month, but I'm leaving in a few days' time because I've got a bit of a break and I want to go down to that part of the world, and it is one of my favourite parts. But, you know, look around in my own way. Outside of the band and stuff, I love traveling. Inside the band, I love traveling. Outside the band, I mean, you know, who doesn't? But I really do. Actually, a lot of people don't. I'm saying who doesn't? A lot of people don't. A lot of people don't like the road. They miss the comforts of home. They miss the family. They miss all this stuff. It's actually not everyone is cut out for it over a long, long period. I thank the Lord that we have had the chance to do this, but also the chance that we were born to it. To us, it's when I say us, you know, particularly Charlie Burchill, my songwriting partner and stuff, we are very much of the same there. You know, like everyone, we grew up and then you got some money and you got a car because everyone said you should have a car, and then you got a house and then you had two houses, then you had three houses. And there's a point where I just, you know, I'd like to have a suitcase, some jeans, a couple of T-shirts and a flight case with the stage gear in it. That'll do. You know, if I've got my books and my candles, my incense, going back to the thing we were saying earlier there of the different type, the people who are born travellers and those that are not. I'll just give you a final anecdote of when we went to record the last album, Graffiti Soul, and we were working, again, it was coming full circle. We were working in the famous Rockfield studio in the Welsh countryside. Yeah, it's a famous place. So it's, for those who don't know, it's a residential. It's really like a converted farm. They've made some of the barns into these recording studios. And when you stay there, you know, everyone stays together. And we had gone back and a producer who we're working with, Jez Code, is a sort of antithesis of travel, because this is someone who likes his pillow and he likes, you know, his regular program. The Doctor Who on the BBC on a Saturday night at 6:30, and his Marks and Spencer's crisps, and he, God bless him, I love him, but he's just so, you know, that's his thing, and it freaks him out to be away from home that much. Anyway, he had gone down to the studio a couple of days earlier to set up, and finally Charlie and I arrived, and he went to Charlie's room first to see him, and then he came in mine, and he said, he looked really puzzled. He said, God, you both look like you've been here all your lives. You've only been here 10 minutes. Because, you know, we already had our books out. We already had checked out where's the nearest coffee shop, which way is it to walk into town. We had our books, our incense, our laptops, our music. What else do you need?
Destiny.
their new Celebrate the Greatest Hits. That's Broken Glass Park by Simple Minds, one of two new songs on this career-spanning 3-CD anthology. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest Jim Kerr of Simple Minds. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2012, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook. And for this and many more interviews and live performances by the biggest names in rock, visit inthestudio.net.